Welcome to episode 16 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie and I'll be bringing you the news, reviews, interviews and recommendations of the latest must-see theatre. We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, the next hot ticks and friendly advice on where to get hold of those best tickets. So I've had a busy week watching some great theatre. I travelled to Bristol to watch Emma Rice's Wise Children production of Romantics Anonymous at the Bristol Old Vic, and I'll bring you my review and a lovely little backstage interview with the actor Gareth Snook in the next episode of Theatre Audience Podcast. I've been to two first night previews this week. I've seen The Prince of Egypt at the Dominion Theatre and Upstart Crow at the Gielgud Theatre. And I was invited to a rehearsal of The Pirate Queen, and I got to watch the entire cast rehearsing their Act One songs. This production is starring Rachel Tucker, Jay McDowell, Matt Pagan, and Hannah Waddingham, and has a hugely talented ensemble. The sound that they were creating in the first week of rehearsals was sublime, and I cannot wait to watch the show and bring you the interviews. I managed to get backstage interviews with several members of the cast during this rehearsal. And I've included an excerpt of Rachel Tucker singing the song Woman and our interview. The Pirate Queen is a one-off charity gala performance at the London Coliseum on Sunday the 23rd of February. This is in aid of Leukemia UK, and this is from Bublil and Schoenberg, who also wrote the scores and lyrics of Godspell and Les Misérables, which links nicely on to the main reviews. Les Misérables, the gala opening performance at the new Sondheim Theatre, with a backstage interview with actor Kieran Bowling, who plays Grantaire. The Prince of Egypt, first preview at the Dominion Theatre with a backstage interview with actor Jay Marsh. Upstart Crow, the first preview at the Gielgud Theatre. And an interview with Rachel Tucker in rehearsals of The Pirate Queen. Les Misérables at the Sondheim Theatre. So this is the 35th year in the West End for this show. It marks the opening of what used to be the Queen's Theatre, and this is Cameron McIntosh's acclaimed new production of Bublil and Schoenberg's musical Les Misérables. This show has been seen by over 120 million people worldwide in 52 countries and in 22 languages. It is undisputedly one of the world's most popular musicals. This theatre has been renamed after the world's most venerated living composer of musicals. And the sold-out staged concert season at the Gielgud Theatre continues its triumphant world record-breaking run with this brand new cast in this brand new opening of the Sondheim Theatre. This theatre needed bringing up to modern standards. A year ago, I brought 120 students aged 12 and 13 to see the show, and I really did feel that there were sound issues and that it felt a bit tired, and it really did need updating and restoration. This theatre was particularly damaged during the Second World War, and so this is a really special moment in its 112-year history. And the first time that I'd seen this production since it was in the Palace Theatre was a year ago. And I was slightly disappointed because it just didn't have that same feel as it had in that vast theatre space. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how things have changed at the Sondheim Theatre. So Les Mis is a musical that is based on the novel by Victor Hugo, which I sat and read the entire thing through as an 18-year-old. I was very dedicated before coming to see the show for the first time. Its adaptation was by Trevor Nunn and John Caird, and it premiered at the Barbican in 1985 and then moved to the Palace in 1985 and then finally transferred in 2004 to the Queen's Theatre. Of recent years, it moved briefly to the Guildford Theatre for a few months to have this staged concert whilst the Queen's Theatre was being renovated and refurbished and has now been opened as the Sondheim. So a really, really quick summary for you, because it is an epic novel that has been translated into an epic piece of theatre. So in 19th century France, Jean Valjean, who for decades had been haunted by this ruthless policeman Javert after breaking parole, agrees to care for a factory worker's daughter, and this decision changes their lives forever. So as I say, I first saw this production as an 18-year-old. I think I saw it twice in the same year. And then back in the day when I was an actor and I finished my shows, I used to go and sit and watch the end of the show in the tech box. So I've seen the real end of the act too, hundreds of times. And this is a beautiful, epic story about redemption, about love, about belief, and about the possibility of change. So it's the interval at Les Mis at the Sondheim Theatre. This is the gala evening performance, and it is an amazing atmosphere. You can tell that there has been major refurbishment, that multi-million pound funds have gone into this renovation. It's a brilliant new staging. I really am impressed. I can really see the differences. This is being billed as Les Misérables for the 21st century, and I totally agree with this. This is a masterpiece, being granted a fresh new perspective, and I'm really relieved because it was one of my favourite musicals as a teenager and drama school student, and as I said earlier in my introduction, it did feel like it was really tired when I came to see it last year, and I've now restored my faith and I'm really content. The sound quality has been completely overhauled. Clearly the Sondheim has been modernised on the technical side of things. I still miss the drum revolve of the Palace Theatre of yesteryear, but obviously that wasn't going to change. I did love seeing both sides of the barricade and that big reveal. However, I can see that there have been huge changes in the staging, and I am really impressed. I am pinching myself not to sing along, and I'm looking forward to the second half. So the second half was monumental. There have been notable changes. The use of projection was very poignant and powerful. It really evoked 19th century Paris. It was based on Victor Hugo's paintings. This is all new. I don't want to spoil things, but the tunnel scene was so effective, much more dramatic. Obviously now, as we watch this show, we've got in mind the hugely successful 2020 film, and now the theatre's really raised its game and gives us these moments to savour. The special effects are phenomenal. I noticed huge improvements in the staging choices of particular numbers like Lovely Ladies, like the Thénardier Waltz, and Javert's Suicide Soliloquy, and Empty Chairs and Empty Tables was just poignant. It gets me every time. It's a goosebumps moment. It's just haunting. I felt that the curtain call was a little bit odd. It was a bit flat. I mean, we were on our feet. The atmosphere was electric. There was a real buzz. This is the gala performance, and everyone's clearly rooting for this new cast and the staging. The whole Delphont Mackintosh Sondheim team were in, because everyone was in these Les Mis lanyards. I felt a little bit inadequate. I didn't have one. And then there was this huge standing ovation, quite rightly deserved, and it was across all tiers. And the cast were buzzing; they were ecstatic. But it was just weird. There was this sudden silence, because at the end there's this huge orchestral crescendo, and we're all on our feet and clapping. But for me, it just felt a bit vacant, because there was no underscore, there's no finale, it's just quite an abrupt ending. And after nearly 3 hours of stage traffic, it has us kind of buzzing and our ears are ringing, and it's like the end of a concert, quite literally. It certainly left us wanting more. Let's talk about the ensemble. They were brilliant, they're hugely talented, a real eclectic mix of actors, singers and dancers. Some standout performances for me on the night: Jean Valjean, John Robbins. Now, this guy, I've seen him previously as King George in Hamilton, and he had me in hysterics when he played King George. And this is a complete contrasting role. He had me on the verge of tears. His performances, you know, the juxtaposition between the really tender moments, the really arresting, sort of stirring, moving songs, and then the really strong sing-out, resonant voice numbers. Oh, beautiful performance from him. Fantine, Carrie Hope Fletcher, superb. A slightly new 21st century interpretation of this role, brilliant. Gavroche, a superb little actor. Enjolras, Ashley Gilmore, as always, sublime. And Javert was played by Bradley Jaden, brilliant. There was a new interpretation of Eponine by Shan Aiko. This, she's fresh from the title role of Whitney in Whitney, Queen of the Night, and she gave a really strong performance. So overall, fantastic. And I loved the new interpretation of the character Grantaire by Kieran Bowling. And he was really interacting with Gavroche, and this was really new for me. And ever since the performance, I have been singing and humming the songs for days. And a few days later, I caught up with Kieran Bowling backstage, where we had a little chat. And here's our conversation.
So I'm backstage at the new Sondheim Theatre with Kieran Bowling, who plays Grantaire in Les Misérables. Hello.
Hello. Very well pronounced. I can't do that myself.
Well, I did my best. So it's wonderful to speak to you. And
well, thank you,
we
for
are between
me.
Shows, so Indeed. Thank you for taking the time on
well,
a Saturday.
Likewise.
And I mean, you're a very experienced Les Mis performer in terms of the fact that you've done the Queens, you
Indeed.
Were in the staged at the Gilgood.
Indeed, yeah.
And
yeah.
now you're back at
yeah.
the opening of the new Sondheim.
Yeah.
So tell me about this
well,
experience.
Well, it's been completely surreal. I mean, my entry into Les Mis came at a very sort of weird point in my life. I moved back from America, where I trained, and was actually halfway through first year of acting school here in the UK, and I dropped out to audition for Les Mis and luckily got in. And so I was lucky to spend 2 years at the Queen's Theatre as a swing.
Mm.
And then we were all told that they were renovating the Queen's Theatre, and some of us were lucky enough to move next door and do the concert version of Les Mis, which I was fortunate enough to do with my own mother, who was pregnant with me while playing Fantine many years ago.
Oh, wow.
So we were in the show together.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I mean, there's no one I know that can say they've been in a West End show with their mum, you know.
So I probably saw your mum playing Fontaine many years ago.
Yeah, very possibly.
I mean, we don't want to say what age.
No.
You are, very young. So.
Indeed.
And
yeah.
I'm obviously not that old,
exactly.
So that actually
indeed,
works out.
Indeed, yeah.
How exciting.
Yeah. So that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. And we have a great relationship. And, you know, so it was kind of surreal every night to come out on the stage and be performing alongside my mum. So that was an incredible experience. So I was this is recently, so I was a swing on that, and I was on stage swing. So, we were up there causing havoc together. And then I was lucky enough to get cast as Grantaire in the version I'm currently in. And so we doubled up. So when we were coming to the end of the concert in the day, I was rehearsing for the new version that I'm currently in. And so that was, you know, one hell of a chunk of time. And, you know, just trying to stay healthy and happy during that busy period is hard. But we all, those of us that went across, all banded together and got through it. And we just opened the new version of Les Mis the other night, and it's been it's been a wonderful, wonderful opening of this show and this new theatre.
Yeah, I was at the gala performance, and I spent a lot of time going, "That's new." Ooh, yes, like that projection. That's new, very
indeed.
Filmic, like
indeed,
that.
Yeah.
And then I spent a lot of time in the interval doing a bit of a. Okay, so what's the difference? Did they change the upholstery of the seat?
Yes,
ooh,
indeed.
There's a new toilet.
Yes, yes. So,
big changes.
Big changes. And you know, I think it was one hell of a process rebuilding that theatre from sort of a pre-war design, you know. I think it was the Queen's was hit by a bomb during the war, and they kind of restored it and repaired it, but in quite a specific way that was quite dated and structurally not very good. And so Cameron completely renovated the theatre, and it's gorgeous. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean,
the sound quality was a lot.
Oh yes,
a lot better.
It's funny you say that. Yeah, no, that's
definitely because I brought a whole school trip. I think there was 120 of us about a year ago,
right?
A year and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were in the stalls,
yes,
sort of towards the back.
Yes,
but I don't remember the sound being as sort of strong as it was, and I did think, wonder
good.
If this is because it needs an overhaul. It's
probably
old.
Absolutely. Well, my
it made a huge difference.
It does. I mean, my father conducted Les Mis for many years and
very
was a music supervisor.
Family.
Indeed, I know. And I remember, it's funny you say that, he always said that the Queen's Theatre notoriously was hard sound wise to find a balance. And we're lucky that we've got such brilliant sound designers and a sound team that work tirelessly to make sure that everything is balanced and sounds well. But I agree, the sound in this new theatre is incredible.
Very
I wish I could
powerful.
Kind of hear it as it was going on from out back, but I'm in the show now.
No, stay in it. Stay in it. You want to be on the stage. Brilliant. So talk to me about your character then. So this is a part that you've, you know, understudied really, or
yes,
played a swing.
Yes, I understudied
it. Did you get
it
to go on as...
I did content? At the concert. I was lucky enough to get on, I think, maybe three or four times, if I recall correctly.
How nerve-wracking is it going on?
Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah,
no, it's
obviously
scary.
You've got to warm up and then just...
Indeed.
Wait.
Indeed. Yeah. Well,
possibly nothing.
Well, we do.
Do you sing up in
choir? Indeed. Well, we do get rehearsed when you understudy a part. We do get cover rehearsals and understudy rehearsals, but there's no telling when you'll get on after that rehearsal. So that could be the same. I have friends that have done their understudy rehearsal and that night ended up being on. I know people that did their understudy rehearsal months prior and then they get thrown on 4 months, 5 months down the line, and it's you have to constantly work to make sure that material is in your body and in your system so that it's not, when you do get thrown on, a complete shock, you know. But I was lucky enough that I did get on in the concert. And it's a great part. He's a very interesting character to play, and it's a fun character to play as well. Very fun indeed.
And all the student scenes.
Indeed,
because he's predominantly in the second act.
He appears in the ABC Cafe, and he's featured quite a lot in the second act. But I've ended up with a wonderful track in this show, and I play many different small parts, and then when we get to the point in the show where I turn into Grantaire, it's a blast.
Yeah.
It's a blast. And everything from the costume is nice and loose and comfortable, and he's a drunk, you know, so my the choices that I make as an actor are sort of encouraged in the run of this show, which is great. You know,
I must
so
admit,
I
really noticed the character more this time, so that's credit
to you. Cool, well, thank you very much.
But also, the relationship with Gavroche, it was like, yeah. Who's the dad? I don't think I'd ever noticed that before.
Yeah.
And I've seen the show quite a few times in my lifetime.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's I think in this version as well, it's a much more featured part. You know,
we're seeing his storyline a lot
indeed,
more. It was kind of just a very small, wishy-washy subplot. Okay,
yes,
and
yes,
he's gone.
Yes,
but in this, it was like, oh, he's in the foreground. Oh, he's over there.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's a great opportunity to be able to take on that track, because as you said, in this version, it's very featured, and his relationship with Gavroche is lovely, and you know, it's a very sort of brother-like relationship, and it's absolutely wonderful to have a shot at doing it.
Yeah, you can hear all the noise in the background.
Yes, the noises of the West End and Soho. Yes.
So how do you prepare for a role like this then, in terms of like on the day? So you've done a show.
Yeah.
Obviously we're having a little chat.
Yes.
And then what happens next? You grab some food.
Yeah, well, I eat and sort of a lot of the lads in my room, we get our head under our desk and sort of just meditate and rest and chill out before the evening. Some people have sort of very strict routines that they follow. I eat, hydrate, take some rest, and then start getting ready for the second show, just costume and makeup wise, and it's sort of in that process that we rally together and get the energy up for getting that second show there, especially on a matinee day at the end of the week, where we've obviously had an 8-show week and we're coming up to our 8th show of that week you know, requires to kind of really get a good bit of energy going. And we've got a great company for that.
Yeah, and because it's because you say obviously you've carried through Queens to the stage at Gielgud and then coming back, obviously a lot of the other cast are brand new.
Yes.
Are there still lots of notes happening?
Absolutely.
Are we being left alone a little bit?
Well,
or is it still that early days?
Well, yes. I mean, we're very fortunate that we have an incredible creative team behind us, and we're in incredibly good hands with all of our.
It's a huge team.
It's
they
a
were,
huge
like,
team.
All there on the
that's
gala
indeed.
Night.
Yeah, it's very.
How many lanyards?
That's right. it is amazing, and they all work so well cohesively as a unit. Mm. And so it's an ever evolving. Beast, you know, Les Mis is a huge show with so many actors, and you know, we're constantly changing and adjusting and figuring things out as they happen, you know, which also keeps the performance. Indeed, it does.
And do you feel like you've had a little bit of autonomy with this? Because obviously, as you say, it's a huge machine.
Yeah,
it's international.
Yeah.
There's a UK tour going on. Have you had your own sort of autonomy? And obviously, the role is what it is.
Absolutely.
I think with this new staging,
indeed. Yeah, well, it's the version that we're doing is unique as far as Les Mis goes. I mean, obviously there's the touring version has been out, but I think even what we're doing at the Queen's has slight differences and things in it that we as actors have been given the freedom to introduce, and the overall feel of the show is sort of very different from how I've been used to it, you know, in my time at the Queen's and the Gielgud, and it's wonderful. So it feels very alive and very fresh, and you know, you mentioned that we've got a very new company, and that's wonderful. I mean, we obviously have many sort of Les Mis alums that have come back, you know, but a lot of the ensemble is new, and they bring new life and new energy to the show, and it's infectious when you have members of the company that have, you know, come from school or wherever, and this is their first time doing Les Mis. It's a very powerful feeling for them, and it spreads, you know.
Fantastic. And so talk me through your training. You say you trained in the States.
Yes, so I moved to America when I was sort of about 12, and I studied. I went on to study for 4 years out there at a place called LaGuardia High School for the Performing Arts, which in New York is quite a well-known school for training. And so I studied acting there. And I also took singing lessons and other lessons in the arts out there. And then I worked, I did a musical for the New York Music Theatre Festival out there, and was lucky enough to work at the Irish Repertory Theatre there. I came back, I worked a little bit on the edges of London doing a few small bits and pieces, and then I ended up going down to Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was going to study acting for another 3 years there and get a BA in acting, I guess. But I dropped out halfway through my first year to do Les Mis.
Decision.
It turned out to be the right decision for me, and I'm, as I say, I'm very lucky they took me in at 19. I don't know what they were thinking.
Learn on the job.
yeah. So it's been, and I've been in Les Mis since that moment, and I haven't looked back. It's been an incredible job to be involved with, and one that will stay with me, I'm sure, for us, hopefully for,
and immortalised as well. They filmed it, didn't they?
They did.
Staged versions.
I mean, that was an amazing experience. And there's, you know, I'm up there with my mum in that. So
Yay.
You know, that for our family, that I'm.
Was Dad conducting that one?
No, he wasn't. Wouldn't have that been great? Wouldn't that been great? Dad conducting me and Mum. No, yeah. So I'm very lucky that I've been involved with the show in this chapter in its history.
Yeah, very important one.
Yeah, indeed.
So what advice then, obviously you're young, what advice would you give to young people who want to enter the profession, who are going through the rounds of drama school auditions at the moment?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think it truly depends on the individual. My way into this business was not sort of conventional in any way, shape or form, really, so it does depend. But I think finding mentors artistically at a young age is hugely important. Mm-hmm. Having a support network behind you artistically, whether that be a teacher in school or a coach or a parent or whoever it may be, to help you learn those initial fundamental basics of acting or singing or dancing or whatever it may be. And I think also you have to really, and I know this is said a lot, but I think you do have to really want to do it, because there's nothing about this business we're in that is easy. That includes the training and everything beyond that. I mean, my acting teacher in America, one of my acting teachers is a brilliant actor and teacher called Todd Sussman, and he used to say on the first day of class, he would say, guys, if you're good at anything else, do it. But if you have this need to do this, then you know, that's why you're here, and let's get cracking on it. But I think finding mentors as soon as you can and building a team of people to help you learn is important. And I think your need and ambition and want to do it and your drive to do it is equally as important. And then, of course, getting into schools and learning monologues and, you know, watching theatre and watching film and watching other actors do it is also important to get an idea of the world in which you're entering into. But that would be my advice. I'm not sure if I've answered that particularly
that's
well.
Great advice. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much
for chatting today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been lovely chatting to you,
and have a great evening performance.
Thank you.
Top tips for Les Misérables. So this is booking until the 17th of October 2020. I bought my tickets on Today Tix the night before the show, and I went to the gala performance. I was sat in row L of the stalls. I was at the end of the row. I had really good sight lines and excellent leg room. Tickets range from £30.50 right up until £96. The age recommendation for this show is age 8 and above. It's 2 hours and 50 minutes long, including an interval. I recommend that you pre-order your interval drinks, as the stalls bar is really tiny and there's nowhere really to stand. I dare you not to be impressed when you go and see this show, whether you've seen the production before or whether you are seeing this through fresh eyes. I spoke to a member of the audience who had come over from America, and he had never seen this show before and absolutely loved it. We agreed that Les Mis is rousingly evoking not only a specific historical moment, but a timeless effort of the human spirit. This show is about redemption, about belief, about love, and about hope for the future. Prince of Egypt at the Dominion Theatre. So this is based on DreamWorks' animated film. It's got award-winning chart-topping songs such as When You Believe and The Prince of Egypt. It's billed as an exhilarating, powerful and joyous celebration of belief and the human spirit. We have three-time Academy Award winner Stephen Schwartz, who's written the music and the lyrics, and he is also the composer of the global phenomenon that is Wicked. So I've watched the trailers. The music is epic. It's emotional. We've got huge numbers and ballads. And the storyline is thus: journey through the wonders of ancient Egypt as two young men raised together as brothers in a kingdom of privilege find themselves suddenly divided by a secret past. One must rule as Pharaoh and the other must rise up and free his people. They both face a destiny and their struggle will change history forever. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they take this production from the screen to the stage. And Scott Schwartz, who is directing, said that he had to go back to the book of Exodus for the original story from the Bible and to develop this in previous productions. One was at Silicon Valley and one was at Denmark, and this is the UK premiere. And so I'm looking forward to going to see the first preview.
To say this is really a very special night. You know, the creative team, the writers, all of the artists, actors who have been working on this show now for many weeks and some for many years. This is our first time showing it to a live audience. And that means tonight we are going to be learning an enormous amount from you. You are truly the final character in our show, and we welcome you to our company. And, you know, we are just beginning previews, and we're continuing to work on the show for the next few weeks. And the fun thing about tonight is it's a bit of an adventure for all of us in that, you know, anything could kind of happen, and there may be some surprises. So what I would say is it is possible we might have to stop, but if we do, I hope that'll be fun for you, because you can sort of see how it's all put together. And if you like moments, that's clearly exactly what we intend, and if you don't, then that's a mistake. So, but with that, again, thank you so much for being our first audience for The Prince of Egypt. We are so delighted to share this with you. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
So it's the interval at Prince of Egypt first preview at the Dominion Theatre, and I'm in the stalls in row Y, and I'm thoroughly enjoying the performance. We just had, spoiler alert, I don't really want to say, because obviously loads of people want to come and see this, but the end of the first act is pretty impressive, and very important that the safety curtain comes down afterwards, let's just say that. It's absolutely packed here. The audience are loving it, and after each number, we're sort of, every crescendo, we're being signalled to applause and whoop, and we're all kind of getting swept up into that. Really enjoying the performance from Gary Wilmot, some great standalone performances. The singing is exceptional, and the choreography is absolutely breathtaking. It's astonishing, the
the slickness of the transitions, predominantly the sort of actor, dancer, singers, and they're just moving a couple of props every time and creating whole new kind of vistas and worlds. Let's just say that the sandstorm is pretty impressive. The use of projection, teamed with big set pieces moving and the choreography, is just quite sort of sublime and first rate. And they've literally thrown everything at this. We've got the haze, we've got pyro, but I don't want to give too much away. I've just been sending text messages to Jay Marsh, who's in the ensemble and understudying Seti. And I just said, wow, that was quite impressive, first half. And he's just said, there is a lot more to come. So signing out to go to the bar and looking forward to seeing the second half. So we've come to the end of The Prince of Egypt, and I'm here with Rosie Jane, who I was sat next to at the performance. She's actually an actress, and we were talking briefly in the interval, and just tell me what you thought of the show.
Yeah, do you know what, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Thoroughly enjoyed it. For me, it just brings so much back from my childhood. When I was younger, my nan would always put the film on for me and my sister, just because there wasn't a lot of stuff, you know, with... a lot of like ethnicities, I guess, back then. So for me, it just brought back so much of those feelings of watching the film and singing along to the song. So yeah, a really, really fantastic evening. Yeah, very nostalgic. Aww. Yeah.
And have you got siblings? Did they used to watch it with you?
Yeah, my younger sister. Yeah, both of us together every evening with Nan watching this.
Because I heard you saying, yeah, I'm, you know, using every bone in my body not to sing along.
Not to sing along. Really, really trying hard. Yeah.
I think there were some not people around us that were sort of like humming along.
They were. Yeah, you could see it when those songs were coming on. People were turning heads and like looking at each other and stuff.
And we were loving this. Obviously, I don't want to sort of spoil anything, but literally, they have thrown everything at this production, and there were moments where we were like, oh, and that, oh yeah, yeah, bring that on as well. Oh yes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh well, thank you so much for chatting to
thank
me.
You, it's so nice to meet you.
So for more than 3,000 years, this tale of identity, dignity, and the search for a better life in a new land has been passed down through generations. The audience loved the performance this evening, and this production beautifully portrays the humanity at the heart of this extraordinary story. The choreography by Sean Cheesham was awe-inspiring, and this was executed by the brilliant ensemble. There was a wonderful synthesis of stagecraft, and the performances this evening by Luke Brady as Moses and Liam Tamney as Ramesses showed a great rapport amongst the cast. Christine Aledo was sublime. I've seen her before as Peggy Shiler and Maria Reynolds in her original West End Hamilton cast, and Alexia Kadime shone as Miriam. Joe Dixon and Debbie Currup had a great stage chemistry. They were playing the Pharaoh and his queen. Tanisha Spring was Nefertiti. I've seen her before in Caroline or Change, and she had an incredibly distinctive voice. The ensemble was wonderful, but Sasha Woodward really stood out for me as an extraordinarily energetic dancer, and Jay Marsh had wonderful stage presence in the ensemble. I later had a conversation with him. So it's after the show at the Dominion Theatre, and I'm here with Jay Marsh in The Prince of Egypt. Hi.
Hi.
How was that?
It was tiring, but no, very fulfilling. I think we needed an audience. We needed, I want to say, people to play against, or we needed a response from people who are watching with fresh eyes. And yeah, we got that. It was it was pretty incredible. There was definitely some moments which I think will just stay in me for a very long time. Looking up and just seeing everyone, and after When You Believe and End, just seeing people
rise
to their feet.
We were waiting for that number.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you wait a long time.
There's so much I don't want to say, because obviously,
sure,
you know, this is literally the first preview, yeah, and everyone wants to come and see the show. But yeah, we had to wait a while.
Yes, yes.
So when
yes,
it came,
I can feel it. I can feel
really
that everyone's anticipating.
Yeah.
Where is that song going to be slotted in? But yeah, you go eventually.
So how many weeks have we been rehearsing? Months?
I want to say 8 weeks. And then we had a workshop in September, which was almost kind of like a workshop, but I kind of like, here's the material, go and learn it, and it might change. So I don't know if I want to add that in, but technically 8 weeks. So we started in December 10th.
So you've literally seen this entire thing evolve from page to stage, because this is the the first production of Prince of Egypt ever.
Yeah.
Ever, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. It is. There's been versions of it, I think, in Utah. I don't know if that was with DreamWorks,
okay,
but it was with some of the creative team. Some of the choreographer was working on that one. And then there was the development in Denmark in a small theatre there. Mm. So they've kind of been working on it for a few years now. Obviously, this is the first time it's been done in this form, but I think there's been chops and changes and things that have been expanded, and this is the final product, you know.
And so talk to me about the technical rehearsal, because obviously I know you through my friend Danielle,
yeah,
and she said that you were having some messages during the technical rehearsal, because it's just, I mean, it's a hugely technical production. It's very expensive, I would say.
Yes.
And there's a lot of noise in the background, because obviously we've got the whole team here. It's like the after party, the first show.
Yeah.
But how was that? I mean, technically.
Well, it was kind of a bit like, to be honest with you, because we kind of rehearsed in this big, at the National Sony Youth Theatre in Holloway. So we just had a big space. And it was kind of like, yeah, then fireballs come here. And you just don't kind of like, you just don't really think much of it. Or, yeah, we're using lasers here, or we're using this here, or you know. And you just don't really think much of it. It's kind of like, okay, sure. And then you kind of get to the theatre and you see all these things like, wow. So I don't know. I kind of, the technical rehearsal, it was difficult, but it was very much like, for me, like going to a house, a plot of land, and someone saying there's going to be French windows here and a swimming pool, and all you can see is you know, is mud and the rest of it.
So having to visualise it and use
imagination.
So it was
been amazing to get into theatre and see everything.
Yeah.
But at the time it was very much like, we're gonna have this here, we're gonna have this here, so you kinda have to just
and
use
have you worked on a show of this kind of scale before?
No.
I mean, you've done loads of theatre. What's your resume?
I've done Miss Saigon, which is kind of similar. I mean, you've got that big helicopter, of course. And, but no, I haven't worked with a cast as big as this, and the effects and the stuff, everything that's been used. I think
one of the huge, obviously, you know, the lighting, the set, everything, but the choreography and you guys just pulling it together in the ensemble is pretty special.
I think with any, you need a good ensemble. You need people who are going to work hard, and I think we're all just really committed to telling a story and working together. It's a great bunch, and just all working towards, making the show the best we can. And it just means that, you know, you're going to have to work through being tired, you're going to have to work through being frustrated, you have to, you know, and really work together and produce what we produce tonight. So I think we can all be definitely proud as an ensemble. And of course, the principals have amazing moments in the show as well, which is great.
Yeah, because it's just all of those big moments, even just, you know, there's songs in the main characters in the foreground, and then you've just got this huge support, whether they're being very still or completely sort of like telling that moment, really powerful. All those lifts and sort of moments where we're moving forward as a kind of ensemble, unison kind of amoeba. It's quite powerful.
Yeah, I think the thing is that it's a, you know, it's an animated film. So with that, you're going to have so many obstacles that, you know, turning film to musicals is very difficult. But I think turning a cartoon where you can do anything is always going to be very difficult, especially when you're trying to translate that into theatre. So, so when I watched the film, I did think to myself, how are they going to do the Parting of the Red Sea? How are they going to do plays? How are they going to do all these things? And I think the creative team really found a creative way of being able to produce those iconic scenes through the actors, through dancing, through symbolism, through, you know, through everything, you know, and I feel
really exciting challenge.
I mean you have to be really kind of like, I don't know, if you really have to think outside the box and be open minded to even sit down and think, okay, we're gonna, I just don't know if I could even produce that. But then again, I'm just an actor, so that's why I kind of, I'm just a chess piece, you just move me about. but no, there's some amazing brains behind it, to come up with all those ideas, and hopefully people come out of it.
Oh, I think so. There was a huge buzz in the auditorium, and there were these moments where it was like, oh, and then, oh, it was like a firework display where you're kind of reacting. It was like, oh, and they've done that, and now they've topped it with that. Nice. A little bit of icing on top.
I think that's what was really nice about having an audience is that, because, you know, the first time when we see fire or anything like that, you're kind of like, wow. Then you start doing rehearsals, and it's like, okay. You're over with it.
Good, but they don't quite give it all away at the beginning, because that would be a bit kind of like, then you'd be like, yeah, come on,
you're
going to bring now, bring it. But no,
it's
really
nice to get fresh eyes on it, as I said before, and just for people to experience the spectacle of the magic of theatre, and that's really important.
I love that Scott Swartz came out at the beginning to chat to the audience and say, look, hi guys, this is our first show, the bits that you're going to love the bits, and I thought that was really sort of quite endearing. And
someone told me
it's my baby, here it is, have a look.
Someone told me they do that on opening and opening nights of shows when they've just been made. I didn't know that. I've never been part of first cast, but I mean, it is personal to him, and of course, his father wrote the music. He probably grew up with Philip, who wrote the script, and it's a big family, the creative team. So it is his baby, and I'm just honoured to be part of that. And he's a really nice guy, and you can tell he really wants us to do well away from the fame and the money side of it. He just wants it to be well.
So you get a huge family team ensemble feel, which is brilliant.
Yes.
Oh, and what advice would you give to young people who are hoping to enter the profession, or just tips on?
I know it's kind of like a cliche, but I just think you have to really believe in yourself. I am a personal story. I trained with your friend Dan, and we was in different years, but I was never really that interested in musical theatre. I was just, because we trained as actors, and I had this teacher who did kind of like acting through song was the title of his course, and he didn't think much of me. I didn't think he didn't like me, and he never encouraged me. And obviously, I can do musical theatre, but he kind of like really dimmed any kind of like light or any kind of enjoyment or passion I had for doing that. And I just remember one time when you do spotlight in your third year of drama school, think about being professional. I remember him and I knew I could sing. I knew I could do something with my voice, and I remember him just. I wanted to put like highly skilled or good or decent or something like that. He was like, no, you're below good. Or just, he just wanted me to mark something to say I can't sing. And I was like, no, I know I can sing. Maybe not the stuff, maybe not the stuff you like, you know, maybe I can't sing Cole Porter or anything like that, but I can do studio stuff. I know I've got a voice there, you know. And after I graduated, and I got thrown into exploring so many different musical theatre styles and composers, I realised I can do this. Mm. I'm not angry at that teacher, but one thing I look back on, I think to myself, I really wish I had the confidence to say, you know what? Whatever you say, whatever criticism you throw at me, I believe in myself. Mm. I know what I can do, and you're not gonna take my confidence away from me. Mm. So I think my advice, sorry, I'm going around the houses, but my advice would just be whatever anyone says, obviously be realistic with yourself, but just follow your passion. Believe in yourself, because there are gonna be knockbacks, there are gonna be people who are gonna say, they're gonna critique you, and just take it in your stride and believe in yourself and keep kind of venturing forward, because something will kind of come of it, and just enjoy the journey. I didn't ever imagine myself to be in a musical, never mm-hmm. mind the Dominium. I walked past this theatre, never thought I'd be in here. So just enjoy the journey, but I think to enjoy the journey you have to believe in yourself and be brave, and allow that journey to flow. I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah.
Most likely, if you believe in miracles. Yes, you know what? Moment.
Exactly. That song, exactly. Believe in miracles, believe in yourself, and you will get there. Aww. The story of this of Prince of Egypt is really about hope. And I just think that anyone who has an interest in musical theatre, I think you have to have that hope, and you have to be relentless and have a unwavering belief in yourself and belief in that hope. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for chatting to me.
Top tips for the Prince of Egypt. So this show opened on the 5th of February and I saw the first preview. It's in previews up until the London premiere, which is Tuesday the 25th of February, and it is booking until September 2020. There's lots of information on the Dominion website with regards to epilepsy and photosensitivity. There's lots of flashing lights and haze and smoke and fog and pyro, etc, etc. The age recommendation is age 7 and above due to the depiction of violence. Matinees are on a Thursday and a Saturday. There is lots of access information on the website. There are captioned, there are audio described performances, there's a British Sign Language interpreted performance, and the wheelchair access is in the Nederlander box. If you're someone who's incredibly tall, the best legroom is in stalls row A and also in seats N12 and N39 according to seat plan. A programme is £6, which is a little bit expensive. It's not a souvenir programme, just a normal one. And tickets start from £19.50 upwards across all ticket websites. If you forget to print your ticket at home, you will have to pay £2.50 on arrival and have to stand in a long queue. So I strongly advise that you print it in advance. Upstart crow at the Gielgud Theatre. David Mitchell makes his West End debut in Ben Elton's stage adaptation of the critically acclaimed BBC TV sitcom Upstart Crow. It's an all-new comedy, and David Mitchell dons the balding wig and creates his iconic characterisation of William Shakespeare. Gemma Whelan from Game of Thrones and Gentleman Jack will co-star as the sweet and fragrant Kate, joined by a troupe of players for this 11-week run. It's directed by Sean Foley, who is a double Olivier Award winner and Tony nominee. He's been nominated for acting, writing and directing, and is best known for The Lady Killers, The Man in the White Suit, Do You Come Here Often, and The Play What I Wrote. Ben Elton, the writer, is a multi-award winning novelist, playwright, TV writer, screenwriter, lyricist, TV director, stand-up comedian and occasional actor. Best known for The Young Ones, Upstart Crow and Blackadder, which he wrote with Richard Curtis. Musicals that he's written alongside Andrew Lloyd Webber include The Beautiful Game and Love Never Dies, and he also wrote the book for We Will Rock You. He's won 3 BAFTAs and 2 Olivier Awards. So I'm a huge fan of this TV series. The first episode aired in May 2016 and was created as part of the BBC Shakespeare Festival. It was celebrating the life of William Shakespeare 400 years after his death. David Mitchell plays the Bard alongside Harry Enfield and Paula Wilcox, who are his parents, and Lisa Tarbucks, who plays his wife. It starts in 1592, where we see his influences, his family, friends and profession, and how he is inspired to create his legendary stories in his plays. As a theatre studies degree student from Warwick University, I specialised in Shakespeare and spent a great deal of my youth in Stratford-upon-Avon at the Royal Shakespeare Company and at the Shakespeare Library. I'm really interested to see how this hit TV comedy series is translated to the stage, and I'm off to see the first preview. So the curtain is down at the end of the Upstart Crow first preview, and overall I enjoyed the performance. Lots of clever meta theatre gags, lots of race, gender and politics jokes, so exactly what Shakespeare did in his lifetime, a lot of social commentary. Many of the audience members were diehard fans of the show. In the audience, even right up at the back, we're laughing out loud. It's very funny. It's the first preview, so the actors will now know which gags are working, etc., so they'll be able to ride the laughter more. I noticed a bit of a ripple effect on many of the gags, and a lot of them were having the rule of three, and so when we actually hit that final punchline, sometimes the volume was lost, as there were a few issues, teething issues with the sound quality, and so the laughter kind of cut through this final gag. Each of the characters from the TV show kind of got a cheer for every new entrance and exit, which I totally get because the fans of the show were in. It was a bit of a panto atmosphere in this respect, and I find that slightly annoying. But I feel that if you don't know the TV show, you will still enjoy this theatre production. I think that you have to have some kind of knowledge of a couple of Shakespeare's plays at least in order to get the most out of the humour, in order to just catch those lines and those gags or see where things are coming. The whole cast did a great job, but for me, Gemma Whelan just stole the show. She's a consummate performer. She really played up to us in the grand circle. And I think, actually, as a fan of the show, I missed characters like the mum and dad, so Paula Wilcox and Harry Enfield. Lisa Tarbuck isn't in it, who plays Anne Hathaway. And I absolutely adore Spencer Jones, who played Will Kemp, and Dominic Coleman, Kandel, and Tim Down, who played Kit Marlowe. Having said that, we've got a lot of new characters in the show. I also missed my friend Monty, who plays the Dark Lady, but I knew she wasn't going to be in it. Having said that, Robert Rouse, brilliant. Mark Heap, fantastic, although we don't get to see him as Robert Green, but in a new guise. Which is quite funny. Steve Spears and Helen Monks all do a great job. And a newcomer, Reese Weathers, plays Mr. Whiskers, the dancing bear, incredibly well. We were chatting on Twitter the day after the show, which means that the gag exit pursued by bear, one of Shakespeare's most famous stage directions, can be used, which is used in A Winter's Tale. But overall, really enjoyed the performance, and people should definitely go and see this. And I think as the run goes on, it will really, really find its feet. Top tips for Upstart Crow. So I went to the first preview, which was on the 7th of February, and this is only running for 11 weeks until the 25th of April 2020. I booked through Ticketmaster as soon as the show was mentioned, sometime back in November, and so the tickets were quite expensive. We paid £34.50, which included a booking fee per ticket. This was in the Grand Circle, and this was row H. The view's not bad. It's the penultimate row of the entire theatre. I wouldn't say that this was the greatest value of money I've ever had. However, the view from the Grand Circle is marginally better than what you'd get at the Duke of York's or the Harold Pinter or the Piccadilly Grand Circle. Much, much better than you find at the Palace Theatre on Harry Potter. The steps, however, are incredibly steep. If you suffer from vertigo, not great, and don't wear heels, it's literally impossible to carry a drink to your seat. Wheelchair access, I feel, is down in the dress circle slips, and actually looking over,
grand circle and dress circle slips look to be a really good option. Programme is £4.50 and I recommend you go and try out this show yourself. The Pirate Queen. So on Sunday the 23rd of February, there's going to be a one-off charity gala performance at the London Coliseum of Bublil and Schoenberg's The Pirate Queen in Aid of Leukemia UK. Amongst others, this will be starring Rachel Tucker as the Pirate Queen, Jay McDowell, Matt Pagan and Hannah Waddingham. This is based on the story of Grace O'Malley, the personification of Ireland, and The Pirate Queen is an epic tale of love, honour and piracy in Renaissance Ireland. I was invited into the rehearsal room and was lucky enough to hear many of the Act One songs, including this rendition of Woman by Rachel Tucker. Then spoke to several members of the cast, and these interviews will be in a future episode of Theatre Audience Podcast. I had a conversation with Rachel Tucker about her last few performances on Come From Away as Beverly Bass before she transfers to Broadway, and about the development of this role on Pirate Queen. Apologies for the sound quality, as there were several interviews going on at the same time in a very echoey room. Here's our conversation.
So I'm here with Rachel Tucker.
Hello.
And I just heard you doing the Woman
song. Yes.
Yeah. How was that?
It was a bit nerve-wracking because that was actually the first I'd really sung it out.
Right.
And in front of even the cast hadn't heard it.
Really?
Yeah, a really baptism. What is it? Baptism of fire? Yeah. Really very, rather, yeah, rather new to me. But
have you done that song before?
Is it no.
Audition? Really?
No. Like, really? Like, that's like the third time I've sung that
song. Wow. Well, you wouldn't have thought
well,
that.
Good.
Well, that's pretty impressive. I loved particularly the moment where, you know, at the start you were like, yeah, I haven't done this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you've got the book. And then I love that moment where it was like, crescendo moment. I've got the room. Then it was just like, and book on the floor.
Script drop.
Like, yeah, yeah. In time with the music. It was like,
choreographed.
Oh, God, you were
like, I know the end. It's fine. I just didn't want to mess up the words, you know.
Oh, so. No, it's brilliant. So how are you feeling about the whole sort of Come From Away? You're literally, so, wait, let me just get this right. I brought about 60 kids to come and see Come From Away about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And they thought it was really cool, right? I don't think I'd seen you about a year before.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And then I hear that obviously you're taking it up to Broadway. So you must be rehearsing a little bit with the new cast as a kind of handover.
I will when I get there. So this finishes on the 24th. And I fly the next day on an American Airlines flight. Obviously, could you imagine me being on a British Airways? They were like, no, this doesn't work. So, and I start rehearsing.
That's a great answer.
Isn't it? What it is. It is.
Yeah,
I think they're going to use it. So I start the next day.
Amazing.
So I'll do a little refresher, because it'll be 2 or 3 weeks, and go over my lines, go over some music, and then a little put in with the new company, or with the company over there. Get to know them with you, I get to know all the...
literally... Working all night and working all day.
Yeah,
you do come from away tonight.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And then are you also in the rehearsal room a little bit with the new cast, with Alice Fern
and
the takeover?
No, because the ones that are staying are doing that. Like, they're doubling up this week as well. So they're rehearsing today.
Because I think Harry Morrison's staying on. I saw him in a little clip.
Yes.
I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's hard work, writing these times, but we'll be all right. Just pace yourself, and we just need to, you know, just need to pace yourself.
I was hoping to see you at my friend Jason Kravitz was doing a show at the Crazy Cops, and it was like, it's just, there was so much going on for me. Like, it was so funny.
Was it a good show?
Yeah, really. So glad that I had to help. But I'm going to make it up to him in New York. Said. Do a show in New York, but I just,
just too much.
I had to say to Jason, I just phoned him up with him, was like, listen, I'll be screwed with you. So, and what advice would you give to young people who are looking to enter the profession? Because you've just, the last few years have been incredible.
And it really doesn't go everybody's way, it doesn't happen to everybody, and you know, you do almost take a gamble in this business. But a bit like, kind of a bit like Grey's Anatomy, it's like there was nothing else I could have done. I'm just worried. I was put on this world, I think, to do what I'm doing. And I feel a bit of a trailblazer for kids from Northern Ireland and flying the flag and showing young kids from Northern Ireland it's so possible. If you put your mind to it, if you love what you do and you do it really well and you aim as high as you possibly can, it's possible. Not everybody will make it, but you might do all right on your journey there. You might, oh, that's all I wanted. I just wanted to make a living and love what I did. And I actually,
how did you start that? Did you go to drama?
Yes, well, I did drama school here in Royal Academy of Music in London. It was 1 year, but before that I had sung with my dad all my life, and always music and musicals in our family, and I was always acting, and so in our blood, it was in my family, and it was always encouraged. And you know, even at school, it was really encouraged because they saw I had something. So it was totally, I was pushed in that direction. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to do what I loved when I was a kid, and then whenever I started doing it professionally, it's like, oh, I could keep going and go higher and do better and achieve more. You know, you take tiny steps and then they kind of snowballs.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's what you want.
Yeah. Because
right,
you've been on Broadway before.
Yeah, twice.
Nominated.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, and it's also right time, right place, mm-hmm. right Jane Collins.
I mean, this part, the girls earlier that I was speaking to, Sabrina and Jamie, they said that this part, Grace, is made for you. They were like, oh my God, who else would you have?
I mean, I feel that too. It's like, she's Irish. Big singer, you know, it's like being very connected to this, these types of things.
Do this, come from away for the year, come back,
yes.
Do Paris.
I'm doing the Judy. I'm coming back to fly back to do Judy Garland shows in April and May. It's a big concert with a big orchestra.
Oh, wow. Oh, can we chat when you do that?
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Oh, definitely. Royal Festival, I think, on the 25th of April.
Oh, I love Judy.
So, all right. And then Tokyo, a week in Tokyo in June. See what she wants. Thanks. So, listen, I'm taking the work.
It will
always be this busy, so
I'm just going to sit here.
And now for my finale and curtain call. This week's big openings are Endgame at the Old Vic, Opera Undone at Trafalgar Studios, and Pretty Woman at the Piccadilly Theatre. These will all be in future episodes of Theatre Audience Podcast. And a huge thank you to Jay Marsh, Kieran Bowling, Rosie Jane and Rachel Tucker for chatting on my podcast this week. Why not grab a ticket for one of the productions mentioned in this episode? Please tune in next time and recommend us to all your friends and family. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast, and do send us any recommendations of things you think we should see and review. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, and leave us a little review. Until next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.